We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Usual suspects, pick your nearest or dearest trail and get ready to leave your worries at base camp. Because Honda is here with a great getaway event to help our family of riders plan an escape from the routine. It's all happening now at DeSoto Honda in Olive Branch. That's where you'll find exclusive offers on your favorite Honda motorcycles, ATVs, and side-by-sides, like the 4Trax Foreman. Built to never quit, it offers the comfort you need on long rides and work days. Plus, the bigger engine for 2020 means even more of the proven power you expect from a Honda ATV. Right now, you can ride off on the Foreman and save big with up to $600 in factory to dealer incentives on select models. Visit or call DeSoto Honda, 5656 Goodman Road in Olive Branch, and hatch a plan for adventure during the Honda Great Getaway Event. Factory to dealer incentives are good with select new and unregistered models. See dealer for complete program details.
A fellow went up to the desk in the hotel lobby to register. A large dog lying in front of the desk made him nervous. The desk clerk greeted him. Uneasy, the man asked, "Does your dog bite?" The desk clerk simply said no. With that assurance, the man decided he would pet the dog. Just as he put his hand down, the dog bit him sharply. In pain, he said, "I thought you said your dog wouldn't bite." I like the desk clerk's response, "Sir, that's not my dog." It's important to ask the right questions. The questions we ask determine the answers we get. One question we ask God is, "Why are you punishing me this way?" The truth is, God isn't punishing us. We need to ask, "What do you want me to teach me in front of all this suffering?" So examine the questions you ask. Instead of why is this happening to me, ask, "What could I learn from this?" I'm Shane Stanford from Christ Church Memphis. You matter.
Visit ChristChurchMemphis.org.
92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parish Show.
I'm here. My name's Gary Parish, speaking to you from Memphis, Tennessee. Bennett Doyle's producing the program. Glad he's with me. Glad you're with me. Hope you're getting through the day just as best you can. And I hope you didn't give up on last night's Game 7 between the Nuggets and the Utah Jazz, because nobody could make a shot. Because despite all of the misses, the game was great in the final moments. Was Denver crazy to try to score in transition with a two-point lead, less than 10 seconds to play, shot clock off? Was Mike Conley wrong to not find Donovan Mitchell for the final shot? We'll get into both of those questions momentarily. First, though, quickly, let me set this afternoon's schedule for you. 4:20, be honest with you. We're supposed to have Nate Duncan, NBA insider. Bennett booked him. Bennett did his job. But Nate Duncan could not do live at 4:20. So Bennett asked me, I guess it was a couple days ago, "Do you think you can record Nate Duncan 3:25 on Wednesday afternoon?" I said, "Yeah, I don't see why I can't do that." And so that was the plan. I even got a whole file of Nate Duncan questions here. And then as I was driving in today to the studio, for the first time in a long time, I got pulled over by a police officer. I will say it was a pleasant police interaction between myself and the officer. I was breaking the law. I was doing something I wasn't supposed to be doing. He asked me. I just told him the truth. I used to try to lie or play dumb, and then I got to a point where, like how many times these cops get lied to every day? Like, do you know why I pulled you over? Yes, sir. I know why you pulled me over. I was probably going 70 miles per hour, and the speed limit's not anywhere close to 70 miles per hour right now. If you want an explanation, not an excuse, there's no excuse, officer, but if you're looking for an explanation, I'm in a hurry. I've got to record Nate Duncan at 3:25. And
what do you think about that?
He didn't seem to care about Nate Duncan. He didn't go, "Oh, I love Nate Duncan," or anything like that. And so he was a perfectly pleasant officer, and we got settled. Everything's settled. But there was no way I could get here by 3:25. So we're not going to have a guest in that second segment like we normally do, but I will use that segment to talk to you about college basketball because the NCAA has now targeted a specific date to start the season. It's not November 10th, which is when the season's supposed to start. It's November 25th. And I had a conversation with a Power 5 conference coach earlier today who told me what their league is talking about doing. And it's not the same thing every league is talking about doing. We'll get into that in the next segment. When I finish that, I'm going to take a break, come back and do four notable stories at 4:44, at which point I'll discuss four previously undiscussed stories among them. Jay Wright announced today that he's not a candidate for the 76ers job, so that's good news for Villanova. We'll get into that around 4:44. The PGA Tour has announced the dates for next year's WGC FedEx St. Jude Invitational. It's the week after the Olympics. Is that good or bad? We'll discuss it a little later on this hour. Congrats to Patrick Mahomes, Super Bowl winning quarterback, Kansas City Chiefs, is now engaged to his high school sweetheart. So that's a nice story. Tell you about the bride-to-be just before 5 o'clock in the state of Mississippi announced this afternoon that a child has died in the Magnolia State from COVID-19. The child was between the ages of 1 and 5. The child was otherwise healthy. So, yes, it is unlikely that children will die from this virus. That's been established. But it does happen. And now it's happened in my home state. We'll get into that during four notable stories, 4:44. 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins is just like always. Then I'll eventually do dinner to go and get on out of here. So that's the rundown. We got a lot to get to, but I wanted to start with the NBA. Two games last night, two more tonight, and we'll get into what's happening tonight later on. But I want to spend this segment on last night's Game 7. It was not the game we expected to watch. Neither Jamal Murray nor Donovan Mitchell got 50 points or 40 points or 30 points or even 25 points. In a series that had featured six previous games with the winning team scoring at least 117 points each time, and Murray and Mitchell each getting at least 50 points twice, this was something different. The Jazz only had 36 points at halftime. There were three different quarters in the game in which one of the teams was held to 15 points. Denver shot 37.3% from the field, 25.8% from three-point range. Utah shot 38.0% from the field, 23.5% from three-point range. So it was ugly, ugly, ugly. At times it looked like it felt like a bad college basketball game because you get a lot of those type of games in college basketball where nobody can make a shot. In the NBA, they are less often what we experience, but it was certainly the case last night. It looked like two teams that had been playing every other day for a long period of time, and they were just – they looked exhausted. And I don't know if you saw the Jamal Murray interview with Scott Van Pelt after the game. And Van Pelt was like, you know, in the series, got to be back out there on Thursday. And he's like, hold up, we got to play again on Thursday? Like, it's like late Tuesday now. We got to play – we got to start another series on Thursday, but that's the schedule that they're committed to at this point. What last night's game lacked in made baskets, it did make up with drama. You know, Utah erased a 19-point deficit and then actually led 70-68 with 5:24 left in the fourth quarter. And from there, it was back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Nikola Jokic scored with 27.8 seconds left to give Denver an 80-78 lead. Utah called a timeout. And then it was Donovan Mitchell bringing the ball up the court, down two with 14 seconds left. And Bennett, if you've got the sound, here's what it sounded like on ABC.
10 on the shot clock. Had it back tapped. He lost it. The Nuggets come up with a defensive play. Murray, they missed the layup. Gobert got it. Mitchell hanging at the other end. 2 seconds to go for the win. And it rims out. Yeah.
Now, it was such a scramble, like a chaotic scene, that the play-by-play guy actually didn't get a great call there. He didn't identify the shooter on either end that missed the shots. But the shooter at the buzzer, it was our old pal Mike Conley.
Mm.
And the ball went halfway down. I mean, my God, it looked good.
It really did.
It looked good leaving his hand. It looked good on its way. It went partially down the rim and then just rimmed out. It was a wild finish, and perhaps it's hard to follow what was happening with a television play-by-play on radio. So here's what happened. Donovan Mitchell, again, they're down two. He turns it over with 11.2 seconds left. And again, the Jazz are down 2 points. Normally what you see there is the team that's up with the ball, in this case Denver, they play keep away or just hold the ball. Shot clock's off.
Yep.
They play keep away or just hold the ball until the losing team fouls. But that's not what happened here. Instead, Jamal Murray raced it up the court as if they were down two. They're out in transition. 9 seconds, 8 seconds, 7 seconds. He's trying to score in transition for some reason. So he passes it to Torrey Craig, who misses the layup. Rudy Gobert grabs it, gets it to Mike Conley. Then Mike misses that three, a transition three, a tough shot at the buzzer, and that's that. Denver wins and advances. So there's two interesting decisions in that final wild sequence that have gotten a lot of attention. Like, one, should Denver have tried to score in those final seconds up two, shot clock off? And two, should Mike Conley have passed to a wide-open Donovan Mitchell at the buzzer and let him take that shot? So what do you think, Bennett? The Nuggets are up two with the ball. Shot clock's off. They tried to score in transition. Obviously, it didn't go well, but was it the smart or right thing to do?
No. God, no.
I think I'm with you.
That would have been one of the biggest blunders in playoff history if Mike would have hit that shot and the Jazz end up winning that game.
And that's what Jokic said last night after the game.
Yeah.
He said, we're all laughing about it now, but like that could have been awful.
Yeah.
You know, like we gave them the ball back. We didn't have to give them the ball back.
Yeah, because, I mean, at worst, you get fouled, and let's say you miss one. You're probably making one free throw at least to make it a three-point game, and so all Utah could do was tie. Like, it would have been a huge blunder.
Like, okay, so Jamal Murray's got the ball, right? So it's not like one of these situations where you've got to get him the ball. He's got the ball.
Just stand there.
And he is an 88% free throw shooter.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to at least make one.
There's no scenario where he misses two. 88% free throw shooter, not missing two free throws. So the apps, for all intents and purposes, the worst case scenario is you're up three. Utah can maybe make a shot and tie you. The more likely scenario is that you are up four. That's the more likely scenario with an 88% free throw shooter at the line. So I'm with you. On one hand, all's well that ends well. But if Mike's shot goes down, or if Mike gets that ball to Donovan and Donovan's shot goes down, you are talking about one of the all-time boneheaded plays in basketball, playoff basketball history, an elimination game. All you had to do is do what teams always do in those situations. You're up two, shot clock's off, make them foul you. Put it in your best free throw shooter's hands. In this case, he's already got it, and make him foul you. Then go to the free throw line. 88% free throw shooter, he's going to make those.
Yep.
He won't miss two. Because you didn't play it that way, Utah ends up with a shot to win the game. And it almost went down. Boy, if you're on that Denver team, especially if you're Jamal Murray, who was running that break, you got to feel sick when that ball's in the air because it's happening so fast, but you realize, oh, my God, what is maybe about to happen? And I saw some people, even people I respect as basketball minds, arguing the other side of this last night, like saying, listen, when you've got a wide-open free layup to go up by four in the final seconds, you take the layup.
Not wide open.
It wasn't.
Rudy Gobert is down there. He's one of the best big defenders in the league, if not the best.
Well, Rudy, I don't think impacted that play. But it was not wide open.
It was not wide open.
Mike Conley did contest. Now, if...
That's correct. Yeah, I'm watching it now. Mike contested it. Mike was in front of both of them.
Right. So it was not... Mike tried to stop the ball, and then he contested. Mike did exactly what you're supposed to do. Stop the ball, and then contest if you can. And so it wasn't a wide open layup.
No.
So that's like that's a false premise. Like, well, you've got the wide open layup, you take it. It was not a wide open layup. It was a makeable layup. It's a layup a professional basketball player should make, but it wasn't wide open. And either way, if your option is take a somewhat open layup or just let your 88% free throw shooter get fouled, you got to let your 88% free throw shooter get fouled. So they are very fortunate that we'll forget about all of this, you know, middle of next week because something else wild will happen. But if Mike Conley's shot goes down, we are talking about or at least remembering how Denver blew a game 7 for years and years and years. You might not remember a lot of bigger things that happened in these playoffs, but remember when Denver tried to score in transition, final 10 seconds up 2, shot clock off, and then Mike Conley hit a 3 at the buzzer to eliminate it? You'd never forget that. They got lucky. They're fortunate it went well, but I don't think they handled that the smart and proper way. The second question, should Mike Conley have passed to a wide-open Donovan Mitchell? What do you think?
No, because when Mike gets to the three-point line, there is almost exactly 1 second left on the clock. If he passes that to Donovan, he might not get a shot off.
I'm with you on this one, too. Yeah. I don't think you – listen, I'm not saying – for me, the other one is like, I don't even know what we're arguing about. Right. I'll listen to this argument because Donovan Mitchell was wide open.
He was wide open. There's no doubt about it.
At one point, there's an official – an official is the closest person to him. And so he's wide open, and he's standing there with his arms in the air. He has made himself visible. The problem is, for Mike to make that pass, you're asking him to do two things. One, recognize exactly what's happened in a pretty chaotic and quickly about to be over situation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have to understand, like, this wasn't a sequence that came out of a timeout or it was like turnover at this end, race to the other end of the court, miss layup, we're racing back the other way, all in a span of like 12 seconds. It's chaos. And I know coaches always talk about no time and score and all of that, but it's one thing to come out of a huddle and know, okay, I've got 3.2 seconds. You can sort of, you know what that feels like. If you're a basketball player, you know what you can do in three. I might not know what you can do in 3.2 seconds, but you know what you can do in 3.2 seconds. Can I get 2 dribbles? Can I get to the 3-point line? Can I get across half court? Like all of these things, if you play as long as Mike or any of those guys have been playing, you have a pretty good internal clock for that. The problem with this is when you actually come out of that timeout, the whole thing starts with Donovan Mitchell starting to go around 13 seconds. And then it's a turnover, and you're just racing back. Remember, Mike Conley is the guy who contested the layup at the other end.
Mm-hmm.
So he races back. And then the missed layup, Gobert gets it. Mike's begging for the ball. Gets it to – you lose track of where you're at on the clock. You just do.
Yeah, and if you look at it, like Donovan is – like you said, he's clearly wide open – but Mike would have had to make a spectacular pass to get him the ball. I mean, the Nuggets are back with him.
There's a guy in the passing lane.
Yeah.
Maybe two. So you've got to be able to recognize, do I have the time to get it there? And he might have. It would have been close, though. He might have, though. But you got to make that decision in real time, which is obviously complicated. And then you got to make the pass, which is not, I promise you, if you had an angle shot from behind Mike Conley at Donovan Mitchell, that pass looks a lot more difficult than it looks on TV from the angle we're watching. And so even when I was watching in real time, like watching it live, there wasn't a moment where I said, oh, my God, get the ball to Mitchell, get the ball to Mitchell. I didn't think that. I was like, let's see if he can get a shot off. When you go back and watch it, it's pretty obvious Mitchell is wide open. But can you be aware of that? Can you calculate you've got time to do that? Do you even have time to do it? And then can you get the ball there? Because there is a player, perhaps two, in the passing lanes. It's a lot of stuff going on. Beyond that, it's a hard shot, but it's not a shot Mike can't make. Mike's a great shooter. Oh, by the way, who's a better three-point shooter, Mike Conley or Donovan Mitchell?
I mean, in this series, it's probably Donovan, but, like, overall, it's probably Mike.
Career, it's Mike Conley. This season, yeah, it's Mike Conley.
Okay.
Mike Conley is the better shooter. Donovan Mitchell's the better player, the better scorer. Mike Conley's the better shooter. Now, is a transition full-speed three-pointer much more difficult than a catch-and-shoot three that Mitchell would have had if you get him? Of course it is. But, like, I just don't think it was a horrible shot. And evidence that it wasn't a horrible shot was that it almost went in. And we've seen Mike make similar shots before. So it did remind me, as this debate started raging, if you will, about whether Mike should have got the ball to Donovan Mitchell or not. Do you remember the Elite Eight game 2019 NCAA tournament? So the last NCAA tournament, when Virginia won, it's Virginia-Purdue. There was a sequence at the end of regulation in that game that was chaotic, in a similar way to what last night's sequence was chaotic. For people who don't remember, I'll walk you through it. Go find it on YouTube. The oh my God, what is happening aspect of it is very much like what happened last night. So Purdue's up 70-67, 5.9 seconds left. And they foul Cal Guy. It's the whole, you know, up three foul situation. They foul Cal Guy with 5.9 seconds left. Goes to the line for two shots. Now, he's going to make them because Tony Bennett's just going to try to extend the game. So he's like, let's make two, and then let's foul, and then let's drag this thing out. So he makes the first, but he misses the second. He was trying to make it. Sometimes in those situations, it's an intentional miss. This was not an intentional miss. He just missed it, left it short. And Mamadi Diakite, the Virginia big, taps it out because that's what you're taught to do in that situation. If it's a situation where we've got to an offensive rebound is incredibly important here because if we don't get it, the game might be over. You're not taught to grab it, really, as much as you're taught to just tap it back out and see if you can get it in one of your guys' hands. So Diakite taps it out, and the ball goes all the way to the other side of the court. And Kihei Clark, the little freshman guard, chases it down. And when he gets it, he's like 60 feet from the basket with his back to the basket. He had to chase the ball down. And there's only 3.7 seconds left now. By the time he gets settled and is back facing the right direction toward the goal he's trying to score on, there's only 2.7 seconds on the clock. Now, what most players are going to do right there is exactly what Mike Conley did last night. I'm going to race it, and see if I can get a shot off. Remarkably, he had enough awareness to see Diakite at the elbow open and enough composure to know I can get him this ball. So he one-hand baseball passes it to Diakite, who takes about a 10-foot jumper, 0.3 seconds left. It's good. Virginia forces overtime. Then they win in overtime. Advance to the Final Four. They obviously win the national championship. When I look back on the 2019 NCAA tournament and Virginia's run, that is the biggest play of the whole thing. Because what I think 90% of players, if not more, do in that situation, if they're Kihei Clark, is they chase the ball down, recognize, oh my God, there's less than 3 seconds left, and I'm 10 feet on the wrong side of the court. It's dribble, and take something around a half-court shot. You miss, and your season's over. And Purdue goes to the Final Four, and maybe Texas Tech wins the national championship. But because Kihei Clark somehow, and I'll never know how he did it because I'm just telling you most players wouldn't, somehow knew I can get the ball there. We've got time. I can get the ball there. In that chaotic moment, he was composed, settled, and he made a brilliant play. That's the play of the tournament. That's the reason Virginia won the national championship. Otherwise, they would not have been in a position to win the national championship. So that is an example where somebody actually did what some are suggesting Mike Conley should have done last night, which is recognize I've got enough time to get the ball to Donovan Mitchell, and then he'll have an open shot to try to win this thing. But the difference is, it's not clear that they had enough time last night. It's not clear that he could have got the ball there last night. And even if he could and they did, it's such a hard play to make, especially in that chaotic moment. So I don't blame him. He got a good look. He gave it a chance. It didn't go down. Either way, I thought this was interesting and surprising. Mike Conley, when he missed that shot last night, he became the first player to miss a game-winning buzzer beater in a Game 7 of a playoff series since, let's make it a trivia time.
Oof.
Bennett Doyle, Mike Conley last night became the first player to miss a game-winning buzzer beater in a Game 7 since who?
God, I can't even think. I'm trying to think of, like, Game 7s, like, of recent memory. Like, obviously, the Damian Lillard one comes to mind.
I'm talking miss.
I know. I'm trying to think of, like, that last season. I'm sure there was another Game 7 last season.
Let me help you. It ain't even close to last season.
It's not last season? Okay. Can you give me a year?
This is going to be surprising how long ago it was. 2001.
Oh, my God.
It had not happened. Somebody misses a game-winning buzzer beater in a Game 7. Last night it happened. It was Mike Conley. But it had not happened until last night when it happened. It had not happened since 2001. Hint, a former Grizzlies player is the one who missed it and did it, obviously, for a different team.
I'll 2001. I'll say Vince Carter.
It is Vince Carter.
Okay.
Very good. 2001 Eastern Conference Semifinals. Vince Carter missed a potential game-winning buzzer beater.
I was thinking Nets. Yeah, that was Nets, right?
Yeah. I don't remember the shot.
He was a star then.
Yeah,
obviously.
I didn't take the time to go look it up. But it was Vince Carter.
Yep.
The last two players to miss potential game-winning buzzer beaters in Game 7s of a playoff series, both former Grizzlies, Mike Conley last night, and 19 years ago, Vince Carter. So now we get Nuggets-Clippers in the Western Conference semifinals, and the Clippers are minus 1,600 to win the series, according to Bet365. That implies a 94.1% win probability, according to what I read. Seems high to me. Like, I do think the Clippers win the series, but according to some simulations that I saw, it is more likely that the Clippers sweep the Nuggets than it is that the Nuggets win the series.
I don't see them sweeping them. I mean, that Nuggets team is really good. I could definitely see him winning game one for sure. I mean, the Nuggets are gassed. Like, you watched that game last night, like, and they only have, and of course, you know, they've got to practice to get ready for the Clippers. So, like, they're getting no rest.
And the Clippers, like, haven't played in a few days.
Right. Like, that should be a route, in my opinion, game one. But, like, the Nuggets are good. I don't envision a sweep.
Yeah, I think the Clippers win the series, maybe like in five or six games. But minus 1,600? I mean, that's a big number. So, it tells you what bookmakers think, at least, that the Clippers are going to be in the Western Conference Final against either the Lakers or the Rockets or the Thunder, and we'll get the answer to that question, or at least part of that question, who's going to play the Lakers tonight. But, Clippers minus 1,600 to win the series. They're six-point favorites in Game 1, and Game 1 is tomorrow night at 8 o'clock on TNT. When we come back, turn our attention to college basketball. The NCAA has identified a potential starting date for the season. It's November 25th. And I was talking to a power conference head coach earlier today, and he had just been on a Zoom call with other coaches in his league. And he made two good points that college coaches are making in at least this power conference. I'll tell you what he shared with me. We'll do that next. You listen to the Gary Parrish Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. You know, Josh Hightower tracks and sells so many homes, he consistently knows about great houses before they even hit the market. So if you want immediate access to the best homes in and around Memphis, getting on Josh's list is free and puts you at the front of the line in purchasing your dream home. Go to joshsellsthemidsouth.com, and don't forget, he's got that 45-day guarantee. It's a system for selling homes that creates more demand and gets homes sold faster and for more money than the average agent. Josh is able to do this because he's experienced, effective. He's someone who can expose your home to the most buyers with the best marketing strategy. Then he knows how to negotiate for the most money possible. But first step is, Josh, just helping you price your home in a way that makes it attractive. Once you guys agree on a price, that's when Josh goes to work. And then if your home isn't sold, that agreed upon price within 45 days, Josh will step in and make the mortgage payments until it sells, or he'll simply buy the home from you. You pick, totally up to you. And understand, it's a risk-free proposition. Working with Josh doesn't obligate you to anything. If he isn't doing his job, in your opinion, you can fire him, no questions asked. He's got flexible fees. There are no upfront costs. So if you're trying to sell a home, call the only real estate agent I'd call if I wanted to sell my home, Josh Hightower. 461-8147 on the web, joshsellsthemidsouth.com.
Consumer investigator Andy Wise here. I've always warned you against third-party extended warranties or service plans. They can leave you high and dry without any of the protections you paid for. You should trust a local service company's maintenance plan instead. I've checked them out, and the best one in the Mid-South is the Choate's HVAC Fam Plan. Lauren Choate's here. Lauren, tell us about the Fam Plan.
Andy, think of the Choate's Fam Plan like your family buying a membership to our family's consumer protection.
Like what?
Like a 40-point heating and air inspection twice a year with 20% off your parts and repairs and up to 2 pounds of Freon every year.
Anything else?
Try a 95-point plumbing inspection with an annual free drain cleaning.
Okay, here's where the Choate's Fam Plan really gets me. You drop all service charges with the Fam Plan.
Yep.
And Choate's Fam Plan members get priority service from the line with all the benefits of your longer warranty.
Right, for just $24.99 a month.
Folks, this is the most consumer-friendly maintenance plan in the market. The Choate's Fam Plan puts your family first.
Learn more at choateshvac.com, and remember, let our family serve your family.
If you ask me, St. Louis may be the most underrated golf city in the country. And since I'm not running around Busch Stadium this year, I've been exploring the gorgeous golf scene this town has to offer. This is Todd Thomas, a.k.a. that one guy, inviting you to tee off at Topgolf or play around at any one of three courses inside Forest Park, the number one city park in the United States, according to USA Today. Just remember, wear your masks and stay 6 feet apart. Book your trip today at ExploreSt.Louis.com.
This is the Frawls family. They live on a piece of land they call greener pasture, and they work on it behind the wheel of a John Deere 1 Series tractor. With its durable construction and features that hook up to dozens of attachments with ease, no job is too tough. The Frawls family runs with us, because this is more than just land. It's home. Nothing runs like a deer. Get a 1 Series tractor for just $99 per month at your John Deere dealer today. For additional cost information, please call toll-free 855-633-2315.
This is a special end-of-summer announcement from Dell. At our Labor Day sale, small businesses can save up to 50% on select business computers with Intel Core processors. We're committed to taking your business to the next level. Give our small business technology advisors a call. They'll identify the right tech solution for your business with Labor Day savings. Visit Dell.com/businessdeals or call us at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
How can Staples help you get back to business?
By printing you new signs for the times.
Staples can help prepare your business for the new normal with everything from in-store signage to health essentials like masks and hand sanitizer, and all at amazing prices.
And this week at Staples, get $15 off posters or yard signs when you spend $75 or more.
Save big this week at Staples.
Ends 10/31. Exclusions apply. Limit one offer per customer. See store associate or visit staples.com/signage for details.
It's crunchy!
Creamy!
Sweet.
Salty. Nature Valley Sweet and Salty Peanut Bars. Bursting with crunchy peanuts, dipped in creamy nut butter coating.
Delicious.
Nature Valley.
Memphis is known for its barbecue, but only one Memphis area restaurant actually serves world championship barbecue, and this is Gary Parrish reminding you that it's Memphis Barbecue Company, which has reopened at 50% capacity. They've instituted sanitation procedures greater than what the CDC and health department require, including a three-step approach to sanitizing tables so you can get back inside right now. So go order online at memphisbbqco.com.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Stretch my hands to you.
life like. This is what your life like. Try to live the life right. People really know you push your buttons like type right. This is like a movie, but it's really very lifelike. Every single night, right? Every single
fight. So we were talking about Mike Conley's potential game-winning buzzer beater in last night's Game 7. It was a miss, and it was the first miss of a potential game-winning buzzer beater in the NBA playoffs in a Game 7 since Vince Carter missed one in 2001. Darian on Twitter said it was Vince Carter for the Raptors against Philadelphia, and he's exactly right. Ding, ding, ding. I went and looked it up. It's 2 seconds left. They get the ball to Vince, and it's like a turnaround jumper just inside the three-point line. He misses it. Game over. Philadelphia wins at 88-87. That, of course, was an Allen Iverson-led team. It looks a little bit like the Kawhi Leonard shot that he made last year in Game 7 against the Sixers. Mm. So it was same two teams. Toronto, Philadelphia last year. Kawhi makes it to lift Toronto over Philadelphia. But then back in 2001, it was Vince Carter missing against Philadelphia at the buzzer to allow Philadelphia to advance, win that Game 7 in advance. So there's your NBA history lesson of the day. Let's talk college basketball. It has now been determined that the NCAA has targeted November 25th to start the college basketball season. That's about 2 months later than it's supposed to – I mean, 2 weeks later than it's supposed to be. Right now, the scheduled start is November 10th, and it'll stay that way officially until September 16th, which is when it'll be recommended for, like, stamped approval. But it's going to be November 25th, which is the day before Thanksgiving. So I was talking to a power conference coach earlier today, and it's really fascinating how much people are working on this, but people still don't have answers for a lot of the questions that are just obvious questions. Like, I'm talking to this coach, and I said, okay, you're scared. He's like, because right now, basically right now in college basketball, in a normal year, every schedule would be announced.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say barely, like, right around 100 schools have announced their schedules so far, maybe even lower than that. And the reason is because nobody has thought for a while that they're playing those schedules.
No, they're going to change, yeah.
But they do have contracts. And so I'm talking to this coach this morning, and he's like, we have not announced our schedule. And I said, like, what are you going to do with your schedule? He's like, I don't know. I said, what do you do with these contracts? Like, you owe this school $85,000 that they have a contract to play you. How does that get resolved? I don't know. I'm like, dude, it's September 2nd. When are you guys going to figure? He's like, all of this stuff is happening above our heads. We get on Zoom calls every week with the rest of the coaches in our league. But, like, we don't know the answers to these questions right now.
Do you think there's going to be some kind of out for a lot of these schools not having to owe these by-game schools money?
I guess the way I would answer that is the lawyers will figure it out.
Yeah.
But one, because I had this conversation with another coach, the one potential out is that most people's buy schedules. That's what these power conference schools are worried about, and the smaller schools are also worried about. We've got these contracts. The smaller schools need the money.
For sure.
The bigger schools are like, the reason you pay somebody, we've talked about this before, $85,000 to come play you in your place is because then you make it part of your season ticket package, and you put 6,000 or 8,000 or 12,000 or 20,000 people, and you make your money back many times over.
Right.
You spend $85,000 to make $3
million. Yeah, we ain't making that money this season.
Right. So the Power Conference, the big programs are going, well, we don't want to pay $85,000 to have somebody play us in front of nobody. And the small schools are like, well, we've got contracts, and we want our money. We don't care who's there. If we're coming to play you, we want our money. So one theory that a coach threw out to me that they're delaying the start of the season isn't because COVID's going to be that much different November 25th than November 10th. What this coach thought was, if the big schools push for a later start date, any of the games that are scheduled before that start date, we can just say we weren't allowed to play them.
Right.
And get out and argue to get out of those contracts, because most of those games are going to be played. I don't want to say most. A good portion of them will be played between November 10th and November 25th. Mm-hmm. So if you even push it back further, maybe you can make that argument a little bit more. Again, I'll let the attorneys figure that out. But this coach told me, and I know this is not true across the board in every league, but this coach in this league, and it's one of the biggest leagues in basketball, he said, if you were to poll our coaches right now, they don't want to play non-league games. They want to go straight to a conference schedule and play conference only. Let's worry about us. And if we can start, if we're allowed to start November 25th and we decide we're going to start first week of December, we can do a 10-game bubble. Like, hey, let's take, I don't want to say the number of teams in this league because it'll give the league away, and I want to protect this guy's, he's talking to me about stuff shouldn't be talking to me about. So the thing he said, it's being discussed in his league, like, okay, half our teams go to a bubble here, the other half go to a bubble there. We have two little bubbles, and we all play each other twice. And then we take a break, and then we mix up the bubbles, and then we play each other again. You know, we play more games, and then we've got a 20-game league schedule, and then we crown our league champion. We have a league tournament, and he said that's just one way to do it. We could all just bubble up for the whole thing. We're all together at one place. Let's stay here for 2 months, and our kids are going to be learning online anyway. And exactly what I proposed a month ago when I was talking about this. So there's multiple ways to do it. His point was, we don't want to play Austin Peay and Jackson State and Little Rock. We don't want to have to worry about what their student athletes are doing, how they're living, when they're testing. We don't want to create little bubbles with them. It's going to end up costing us more money than it costs them, because in some form we'll have to pay for them because they can't do it. Like, why are we worried about them? Like, the coach actually said, it is not our responsibility to take care of the small schools. The truth is, you shouldn't have 357 Division I programs. We're not, like, Kentucky is not the same thing as Eastern Kentucky. So why are we all playing the same sport? It's ridiculous. And perhaps this is the time where we just separate the haves from the have-nots. Or at the very least, just say, listen, you guys want access to the NCAA tournament? You still have it. If you're in the Southern Conference, your league's going to get one bid, and you can figure that out on your own. Mm-hmm. Play your regular season, because the NCAA has already said, we don't care how you give your automatic bid to the NCAA tournament. It's up to you. You just got to tell us how you're going to do it, and then do it.
Oh, that's interesting.
So, most leagues do it by, in fact, all leagues now, do it by who wins your conference tournament. But the NCAA has said you could do it however you want to do it. If you want to have a regular conference season and then whoever has the best record, do that. If you want to have a tournament, do that. If you want to pick a team out of the hat, do that. We don't care. And so this coach from this power conference is saying, listen, everybody, every league will still have access to the tournament, and there'll still be a selection committee. But we don't need to play them in the middle of a pandemic. He said, and this is exactly what I'd argued a month ago, our league can dictate testing protocols, bubble protocols, and hold us all accountable. We can't hold schools from other leagues accountable. So why do we even mix it with them? What if my team plays a team from a smaller conference? They've got positives that are asymptomatic. Now I got two players. And he said, listen, the thing about basketball, like in baseball, I thought this was an interesting point. He said, in baseball, like your pitchers might not actually be around your infielders that much. You know, your bullpen's literally in the outfield. In football, your defensive backs may never sit in the same room with quarterbacks. He said, a basketball team is, they're all together all the time. When you have an outbreak on a basketball team, it's shutting down the whole team. So why do I want to put my team against a smaller team and then I got two positives, we got to shut my whole team down, and then another school in my league is like, see, you shouldn't have been playing them. So let's just not play them. And so this is at least one power conference that is, and I tweeted this earlier today, prepared to push for no non-league games. Or at the very least, say, we're not playing non-league games. A little bit like what football is right now. Like Memphis, like the American Athletic Conference is prepared to play non-league football games. The SEC is saying, we're not doing that at all. And so this basketball coach just said, let's just do it. It can be the same way in basketball. The idea that we have to play non-league games is just crazy. The argument from the other side, from a metrics perspective, is that the metrics don't work. The net rankings, KenPom, they don't work as well if you don't have like a cross-pollinization of data. Like if you've got nothing but Gonzaga playing West Coast Conference schools, it becomes a little more difficult from a computer perspective to stack up Gonzaga with ACC schools and Big 12 schools. And this coach said exactly what I would say to that. Okay, well, that's too bad, but it's not enough of a reason to complicate the process. Again, the goal should be one thing, hold the 2021 NCAA tournament. Once you establish that as the only thing that matters, then the question becomes, okay, what's the easiest way to get there? And undeniably, the easiest way to get there is to not have non-league games. Just don't worry about it. ACC teams play ACC teams. You guys figure out how you're going to do it. SEC teams play SEC teams. You guys figure out how you're going to do it. Big 12, Ivy League, doesn't matter. All of you figure out how you're going to do it. If some leagues don't want to do it, that's fine. We'll see you next year. If one league wants to do it with one big bubble, another league wants to do it with three mini bubbles, fine. Everybody's on their own. And then we'll have a selection committee, take the automatic bids and fill in the at-larges, and then we'll have a bracket, and then we'll play the tournament, probably in a bubble somewhere. And so it was interesting that this coach is like, that's what my league's pushing for, and that's what I think we're going to end up doing. It doesn't mean everybody will do it, but I do believe at least one power conference is going to say essentially what the SEC just said in football. We're not playing anybody outside of our league. We'll play each other. And as this coach pointed out this morning, they're still going to have a college football playoff and a selection committee to pick the teams. Nobody is arguing, well, it's going to be hard because like, who the SEC's not playing anybody but SEC teams. They just say, okay, we'll do it. We'll figure it out. Same thing here. We'll figure it out. The other thing that is being discussed right now is in a normal season, you've got to play at least 31 games to qualify for the NCAA tournament. And obviously you're going to have to lower that just by not starting the season until November 25th. Teams are losing, in some cases, four, five, six games. So the question becomes, what do you lower it to? And the number that's being tossed around is like 25. Like, make it, well, you got to play at least 25 games to qualify for the NCAA tournament. When I was in a conversation with this coach, the point I made to him and a point he said has been made on his Zoom calls in his league is like, you cannot have a minimum number of games. Because what if the best team in the country doesn't hit the minimum? Like, what are you going to do? Like, if you noticed in Major League Baseball, they have never said you got to play a certain number of games.
That's true.
To make the playoffs.
Yep.
They just said, we're going to do it on winning percentage. So at the end of this thing, if the Royals have played 60 games and the Marlins have played 44, if the Marlins have a top two winning percentage in the East or a winning percentage that is one of the two best wild cards, they're going to be in the playoffs. There is no minimum number of games baseball teams have to qualify for the postseason. So my suggestion, and this is what this coach said was his league's suggestion as well, you cannot have a minimum number of games in basketball. Because think about this. Let's say you make it 25 or 18, whatever you make it, doesn't matter. And Kentucky is the biggest brand in the sport, right with Duke. And somehow, some way, they got the best team in the country as well. And then they have an outbreak. They have to shut it down for 2 weeks. And then they have another one. They have to shut it down for 2 weeks. It's not crazy to think that that could happen. So now let's say you've decided, well, it's a 20-game minimum. You've got to play 20 to get to the NCAA tournament. Kentucky's sitting there with 19 games on Selection Sunday. You really keeping Kentucky out of the NCAA tournament? No, you can't do that. So it's like you don't make this harder than it needs to be. That was basically the message from this power conference coach's Zoom call. Let's make this as less complicated as it can be. No minimum number of games because we don't want to have to deal with a bad situation that might come from that. Well, you got to play at least 20 to get in the NCAA tournament. Okay, now Duke's ranked number one in the country and they played 17. You keeping them out? My bosses don't want to keep them out, I promise you.
No.
So just don't even get into that. You don't have to set a minimum, so don't. And also, like, let's not try to play non-league games. I know the smaller schools need the money and they need the games. That's not our problem. It's, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic. You know, when my school, this is what this coach said, when my school is laying off athletic department officials, it is no longer our responsibility to make sure the little guys are being taken care of. We got to take care of ourselves. And the best way for our league to take care of ourselves is just focus on us, play each other, and have a conference season, have a conference tournament, and then get ready for the NCAA tournament. So there's a lot that's still to be determined, but the big news from the past 24 hours, November 25th is the day that the NCAA is going to recommend college basketball get started, for better or worse. When we come back, Jay Wright, Villanova coach, announced today he is not a candidate for the 76ers job. Talk to you about that next. Listen to the Gary Parrish Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
This is Gary Parrish reminding you that the Smile Center is where I go to the dentist. It's where my entire family goes to the dentist. And the reason it's great is because the folks at the Smile Center take care of you and treat you like family. The Smile Center, it's Dr. Maddie Sadeghi's place at 1941 South Germantown Road. They are open and treating patients. And needless to say, they're taking all of the necessary health precautions to keep you and your family safe. That means pre-screening, temperature checks, air purifiers with HEPA filters everywhere, and a limited number of people in the waiting room and clinical areas. Yes, the Smile Center is currently accepting new patients. And for those of you who've lost your dental coverage due to COVID-19, the Smile Center has insurance plans available for you and your family. If you have dental insurance, let me ask you this. Have you used all of your insurance benefits for 2020? If not, you should do that before the end of the year. There's nobody better to do it with than the Smile Center. Again, the address is 1941 South Germantown Road, Suite 101. And the phone number is 901-309-1333. It's the Smile Center on the web, smilecentermemphis.com.
Hashtag Move Memphis Forward is proud to recognize CNS Healthcare. They are currently conducting a COVID vaccine research study. Talking with Dr. Laura McGill. Doctor, it says you're interested in enrolling patients of all ages between 18 and 85, as well as all races and ethnicities. Why is that important?
Well, it's very important that the group of people who the vaccine is being studied on represent the whole community. And having a large population of people of all backgrounds makes sure that when the medication is approved, it will work for everyone who's possibly at risk of contracting the disease.
Doctor, for people that are interested, how do they find out more about this COVID vaccine research study?
The first thing is that you can call our local phone number, 901-843-1045. You also can go to a website, covid19research.us, and you can get information about enrolling there.
That's 901-843-1045 or visit covid19research.us. Hashtag Move Memphis Forward is powered by Best Care Plumbing, Heating, and Air.
I'm John Meacham, author and historian. I'm proud to present a brand new limited podcast documentary series called It Was Said, where I guide you through 10 of the most historic, impactful, and timeless speeches in American history.
Let the word go forth from this time and place to friend and foe alike.
We do not want our freedom gradually, but we want to be free now.
The future will always be ours.
The America of John McCain is generous and welcoming and bold.
Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Directed and produced by Peabody-nominated C-13 Original Studios in association with History, It Was Said is now available for free on Apple Podcasts, Radio.com, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Have you ever wanted to learn a new language like French, Spanish, or Russian, but thought it would be too difficult and time-consuming? Then go to Babbel.com and try it for free. Babbel works because it's built around real life. It teaches you everyday practical conversations that you will actually use. In 15 minutes a day, you'll be on your way to speaking a new language in just a few weeks. Babbel uses a modern conversation-based technique that makes language engaging, fun, and memorable. It starts by teaching you words and phrases. Then, sentences gradually get more complex. Soon, you're practicing short conversations about real-life topics. Babbel is created by language experts who use the spaced repetition method to help you learn quickly and remember what you learned. With Babbel, you can speak a new language. Babbel. Language for life. Now try Babbel for free. Just go to Babbel.com and start learning a new language today. That's Babbel.com. Babbel.com.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
The God Killer, this Tokyo, and I'm Godzilla. Playing blackjack versus death gun on the card dealer. Just bought a demon, I'm screaming.
Jeff Carter's going to join me a little after 5 o'clock, but I'm going to try to rush through this. I got 4 stories I'd like to discuss.
4 notable stories at 4:44. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon.
So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's Four Notable Stories at 4:44. Story number one.
Villanova's Jay Wright, the future Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame coach, announced earlier today that he is not a candidate for the 76ers job. This is notable because the moment the Sixers fired Brett Brown last week, Jay was an obvious candidate. He grew up in Philadelphia. He lives in Philadelphia. So this is one of the rare situations where you could take over the franchise that you grew up a fan of in the city where you were raised and where you still live. You could take an NBA job as a college coach and not even have to move. So for those reasons and a variety of other reasons, if the job was offered, he at least had to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But today, he eliminated the conversation and said he's not a candidate. Now, as I wrote over at CBS Sports, whether that means he's not a candidate because he doesn't want to be, or he's not a candidate because he knows they're going in another direction, remains unclear. But either way, it doesn't matter. Villanova keeps its coach. And he's a coach who's won two of the past four NCAA tournaments and has a team that some people think should be ranked number one in the country heading into next season. I have Villanova third in my top 25 and one, but you know, I don't think it's crazy to have Villanova number one. They're returning every piece except Sadiq Bey from a team that won the Big East championship. So he's got a real chance to win a third national title in a 6 year span, in a five tournament span next season, obviously because we didn't have a tournament last year. Or earlier this year. And do you know how many coaches in the history of Division I basketball have ever won at three NCAA tournaments?
Roy Williams, right?
Sure. You want to try to name him?
Roy Williams, Coach K.
Correct.
And Roy Williams, Coach K, and...
You can start at the top. There's one guy who won 10.
UCLA. Why can't I think of his
John
name?
Wood.
Okay.
So you got three of them. John Wooden, Roy Williams, Mike Krzyzewski.
Yeah.
The other ones are Bob Knight, Jim Calhoun, and Adolph Rupp. Six men. Six people. Mm. Like, you can luck into winning one. That's Kevin Ollie at UConn. There are several guys who won two, but in some cases they, like, won them with the same teams. That's Billy Donovan. Billy Donovan won two titles with the same team.
Yes. Yep.
Like, that'll never happen again. It's such a unique situation, Florida's title teams.
Yeah, especially one and done. Like, it's just, it wouldn't
happen. In one and done era, you're not going to do that.
No.
But, like, Billy's team, which was the one and done era, by the way, but Billy's teams, it was interesting because the two best players both came from money.
Joakim Noah and...
Father was a professional athlete.
Yep,
Al Horford's father was a professional athlete.
That's right.
So these are two guys who are just having a blast dominating college basketball, living on campus, and they don't have to leave for the money. They come from money. So you had those two guys saying, well, we're just going to come back to school. And then Corey Brewer didn't come from money, but he was like, well, if everybody else is coming back, I'll come back. And so Billy like wins a title, and he's got this whole starting lineup coming back. So then they win another one. You could do that. I mean, I'm not saying it's easy, but I'm just saying, like, Billy got won two titles with one team. The list of people, like, it's nothing but legends who have won at least three. Nothing but legends. And so Jay's got a realistic chance to join that club in this next season. And if not then, he's got that thing rocking and rolling at Villanova right now. He'll have consistently have shots. He's only 58 years old. You know, guys are coaching into their mid-70s now. If he wants to do this another 15 years, he can. And so there's a decent chance that he will join that club and become just the seventh man to ever win at least three national titles at the Division I level. And so that's got to be among the reasons that he decided, if he did actually decide to stay at Villanova. Again, I can't make this clear enough. He might have not had a decision to make. You know, it's possible like Philadelphia just didn't want to hire him. Mm-hmm. But either way, he's back at Villanova and presumably will stay there for some years to come.
Story number two.
WGC FedEx St. Jude Invitational is going to be played August 5th through the 8th next year. The PGA Tour announced earlier today. So the question becomes, is that a good time or a bad time? Depends on how you slice it up, I think. On one hand, it's bad because it's the week after the Tokyo Olympics. So we are probably going to miss out on some of the best golfers in the world just because do you want to play in Tokyo one week and fly to Memphis to play the next? Like, yeah. That's a pretty long flight, and it can wear you out. So I don't know. Like, you know, the best golfers in the world not named Tiger Woods have basically, with few exceptions, decided to play here the past 2 years. So maybe they'll just decide, I'm playing there no matter what. We'll see. I hope so. So, but like, it's possible some would just say, I'm not playing in Tokyo one week and Memphis the next. That's outrageous. So that would be the bad. The good would be like, Tiger Woods almost certainly isn't going to be on the Olympic team.
That's what I was thinking.
He's not, only four golfers go, and he's not one of the four best American golfers anymore.
Right.
But he's the biggest name in the world by far, and the biggest thing that this tournament would care about.
Yeah.
And so I actually think the announcement is probably a net positive. We might miss out on, I don't know, a John Rahm or maybe even a Rory. I don't know.
I think Memphians would give up all of that to get Tiger.
You would give would just you, the one would time, you yeah. give up eight of the best golfers in the world if it guaranteed you get Tiger Woods?
Yeah.
I think you probably would. Because even if you don't have eight of the best golfers in the world, you still got, you know, 40 of the best golfers in the world.
Yeah, you'll have other big names.
And Tiger Woods. So, I think this is probably good news, all things considered. But as always, we'll find out at a later date.
Story number three.
Congratulations to Patrick Mahomes. He got engaged, got his Super Bowl ring.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.